Welcome to the Power of the Purse podcast, the only show connecting women professionals to their peers. Join us in a vibrant conversation about the constant struggle to find balance between the demands of their careers and their relationships with money, family, and personal freedom. This isn't just about money. This is about life. Now, here's your host, Lynn S. Evans.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lynn S. Evans, and I am the Managing Director of Women of Substance, LLC. It's my personal mission to help professional women take control of their finances in a way that enhances rather than dominates their lives. One of the ways I do that is by gathering the best knowledge and practices from women who have excelled in their fields. Thank you all for helping me make that mission a success. My guest today is Dr. Catherine Collier. She is the owner and founder of not one, but two companies called Spectrum Dental and Quest Dental. And we'll talk about that in just a minute, but one of the first things I want to do is say welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here and talk to you today.
Wonderful. And one of the questions I asked Dr. Collier in advance, with some of the preparations we did for this interview, was what was one of the things, or the thing, I should say, that you are most proud of? And her response was, I am most proud of my daughters. I raised them by myself, which was the biggest challenge of my life by far. They have turned out to be amazing, caring, accomplished, strong women. We have a very close, loving relationship. I can't tell you how great I think that is that you said that.
Oh, what could be better than that? What could be better?
I don't know, but I just know because I know one of your daughters, Nanya, is phenomenal in what she's doing in the concierge service in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And just her way of being, just mm-hmm. who she is as a young entrepreneur, is just so impressive to me.
Well,
so I get that, but I just want to ask you, what is it about them? That's from me. What is it from you that makes you so proud of both of them? And would you introduce your other daughter to me?
Well, first of all, there's a point where as a parent, you're teaching your children everything, but there's a point when they start teaching you things. And the roles reverse a little bit, not completely, but you see how knowledgeable, you see how reasonable, you see how much they think about things and how much they care about people. And yes, they have inspired me in many ways where I'm thinking, wow, I need to step up my game. Nonya is amazing. She's product of Baltimore City Public Schools, and she was an excellent student, went to Wharton, got an MBA. She's a real she's feisty, and she's whatever she puts her mind to, she really accomplishes it. My other daughter is the same way. Baltimore City Public School. She went on to Oxford, wow. And she works internationally. And this is a young woman who speaks five languages and who can move to a country, learn the language, become settled there, makes friends, starts a career. She's had a business in Brazil. She's just fearless. And that's why, I said, my goodness, they both inspire me. So, when I listen to some of the things that they think about, well, let's see, what's the next thing I'm going to do?
And where did that come from, Catherine?
I just can't even believe it came from me. I can't even imagine that I modeled that behavior, because I don't even see that in myself. I see myself, you know, as I have taken some risk and things like that, and they certainly have seen me work very, very hard. And I know my parents instilled a work ethic in me, and boy, did I instill that work ethic in them. Yeah. Almost to the extent that I'm trying to tell them, you know, maybe you need to cut back a little bit.
Isn't it so much easier to reel it back in than to just to say, oh, please step out and do something exciting. It sounds like they're doing great.
Yeah. And then you see what perhaps possibly workaholism looks like, and you go, they need to take some time off there. But I much rather have this than to have, an adult child that you have to be constantly pushing them out and encouraging them and pushing them. So, no, this is, like I said, it's so gratifying to me to see them. You know, I mean, sometimes not everything they do works out, but they're very fearless, and I'm really proud of them.
Well, tell me, where did you find what you needed in order to become a dentist?
You know, sometimes there are things that are deep within ourselves that we don't know until we're tested. Mm-hmm. And it was certainly not an easy road. I guess back in the day, I can say I'm showing my age, but I went to dental school in the 70s. And back at that time, it was not very supportive environment for women in the dental field. I'm sure that was probably that way in other professional schools and medical and law. You were tolerated. Mm-hmm. And so it was not that was a real challenge for me. But I mean, I found that there was in me some quality that I didn't know, that I was like such determination that I was going to do this no matter what, you know.
And why dental school? How did you pick
dental? How did I pick dental school? Well, my father was a dentist.
Oh, okay.
And but he was actually someone who felt at the time that he says, you know, dentistry is not a good profession for women. You know, mind you, my dad went to dental school in the 30s. So there was like 1% less than that of dentists back then were women. It was unheard of. And so he was not encouraging at all, but I always loved working with my hands. And I still love helping people. I still love it. And I was always drawn to science. Science was easy for me. Science was very fascinating to me. So that was the area that I knew I was going to, major in that in school. Wasn't exactly sure what I was going to, but as I said, I did enjoy using my hands a lot. And I think in some of the, I could have gone into medicine. And I'm not sure if I had gone into what specialty, but like I said, I found out that dentistry really was a good fit for me.
And did you find any help or any support in your decision to start your own practice?
That was just jumping into the fire without knowing you're jumping into the fire. I mean, I made a decision. I saw an opportunity and I jumped at it. And mm-hmm. But honestly, it was that what do you call the God protects babies and fools. I didn't know what I was into. I did not.
Which one were you?
I wasn't a baby.
Okay.
And I mean, I had no idea how to run a business. I had this opportunity to actually step into something that was a fairly large practice. And I, without realizing what was involved with running a business, I knew, you know, I had some of the dental things. I was, you know, a couple of years out of school. I was sort of getting that down. You know, I was still getting my skills together there, but, actually running a, I don't know how you can just teach someone to do it. You can tell people some of the things that they have to think about, but until you're actually doing it, it's still too theoretical. So, yeah, it's still, you know, so even though I may have heard of some of the, you know, the factors that I should have considered, they weren't real to me. So at that point, they became real, and things like doing payroll and, you know, running a business. And I will say that it was, I mean, I was pretty ignorant about it, but one of the things that, that was very helpful that I still have a wonderful accountant, CPA, by the name of Lewis Hutt in Columbia, Maryland. And Lewis gave me so much free advice, and I would call him, and I'm sure I must have asked him tons of stupid questions, and he walked me through. He was always accessible. You know, like I said, well, when you do, well, what are those things you have to take out? You have to take out FICA? What's that? How do you calculate? You know, he's trying to describe over the phone to me how to do it. And it was, you know, remember back then the internet was not a, this is in the 80s. So the use of the internet, was not like it is now. So there's a lot of instruction now that's really available. But back then, I don't know. You needed people like Lewis to help you out, actually. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so he was.
You didn't have YouTubes or things like that.
Exactly.
Go look it up.
Exactly. I will say right now there is a slight edge for people going into business because there's information that's so accessible. But back then, as I said, you know, if you have somebody who shows you how to do things, but you couldn't go to YouTube and see how to do payroll, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, as I said, gave me a lot of free advice over the years. So that was, someone that I feel like, you know, was great support for me. The other things I just learned by, experience, mistakes.
That's teachers.
Yes. People may think, well, wow, you accomplished it. At one point I had four offices and, I was still, you know, running from office to office, seeing patients and whatever. And I did pull back a little bit and saying it's better to have better quality, than to have more numbers, more, you know, quality versus quantity. And I found that it was better to coalesce the offices into two as opposed to four. And that actually was a good decision. I certainly made mistakes, but somehow I've made some good choices too.
Apparently so, yes. And speaking of those choices, where along this path of opening offices and running businesses did you have your girls? How many years into this were you before you had your daughters?
Almost immediately.
And really?
Yeah. And it was, you know, when I saw some of the questions about, you know, how to balance, juggle,
yeah,
motherhood. And I mean, this has been going on from the beginning of when, as soon as you've had mothers who are out in the workforce. I mean, this dilemma is there and is always going to be there, of how to balance and juggle motherhood, and still have a career. And actually not just have a career, but having a business, which is an additional responsibility beyond just having a career. Because you have employees and, you know, you have a lot of, perhaps a certain amount of debt or, rent or all these other type of overhead that you're dealing with, in addition to the practicing your profession, you also have these another thing called overhead and, mm-hmm, employees to also add to that responsibility. And I look back at I guess the person, maybe you should interview my daughters and ask them how I did.
Well, they could be along the way. Okay. We'll get you there.
Because I joke with them. I said, I feel like there was so much of their childhood. I was saying, come on, hurry up. You know, get in the car. And you feel like you're dropping them off and picking them up. Hurry up, get in the car. You're going all these places and you're going, you know, I don't know, like 100 miles a minute feels like, you know, and trying to do so much. But in that, there's still some good moments. There's still, yeah, some rich moments, that, you know, let them know that, you know, although it didn't look that way on the outside, they were the most important thing to my life. Even it may not have always looked that way, but I still wanted them to know that and believe that. And it is kind of it's a tricky thing when you're saying to someone, you're the most important thing in my life. And yet in some ways I spend less time with you. So it seems like a contradiction. But I think if you have enough rich moments, they may get it. And there are times when you make some choices. There are times you may make some choices that, you know, you show up, at their school to be, you know, what do you call when they go on school trips, or they, you know, you just take some time off to do random things to let them know that you want them to have this memory. And,
well, it sounds to me like you've done an excellent job when you look at the end result of these two girls.
Oh,
incredible human beings.
Thank you. And you know that saying, your children come through you, by the poet Khalil Gibran. And I really believe that there's a certain amount that they come through you, and some of their personality and some of their strengths and self-knowledge is somewhat there, and you hopefully nurture it, or you hopefully nurture it, and they come out fine. They come out fine, but
sure did.
I there was a lot of, you know, felt like we were rushing from one place to the other, you know, dropping them off at school and, you know, trying to get to work and hurry up, you know. So
is there any advice you would give to young women in the professions today as to maybe something you learned that you wish you had thought about at the time, any regrets in raising children and also being involved in your career?
Well, I was known you, as you met, as she, by the time she started high school, I gave her a job in my office. And when they were younger, you know, they had allowance and they had chores. And when they got to high school, I said, you know what? I'm not giving you an allowance. You're going to work in my office and then you're going to get a paycheck.
And, I love it.
And, you're going to punch a time clock.
Uh-huh.
And she was phenomenal. I mean, she punched the time clock. She did her work. She was one of the best workers I had. But I think it certainly didn't make her want to become a dentist. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But I think she just, it did bring an interest in business to her. But I actually respect her choice because I said, you know, there's a lot of career paths. There's a lot easier ways to make money than dentistry. So you're right. You know, I said, I don't blame you for not going to dental school, but I think when you have children, if you have an opportunity to feel like they can learn something from you, not from what you're saying, but from what they see you do, that's also a good learning experience. That's something where they're learning. So you don't know what they're seeing from their eyes, but I was fortunate to have that experience with Nonia. With my other daughter, she also worked, but she worked other places. And it was never hard for them, the idea of getting out and getting a job. They were very geared toward that, you know, working and, you know, trying to get their own money to do some of the things that they wanted to do. And that really reminded me of myself when I was, the same age, of the idea of, you know, earning money, having my own money. I think that taught me the lesson. Having my own money gave me power or freedom. I mean, I figured that out around 10.
Wonderful. Good for you. That's fabulous. That's fabulous.
The thing is about having my own money, and
yeah.
I think my allowance was a quarter, but, it
bought a lot, right?
A quarter was a lot more than, but I could see the difference of having my own money versus having to ask for it. And I knew I liked the feeling of having my own money a lot better. And I feel so that seemed like it, that came across to them also. Something feels better when you have that control. When you have, ability to be able to, this is something I want to get, I'm going to get it, I'm not going to get it, this is something I want to do. And let's just say having your own money or mastery over money gives you a certain freedom. And so I think they got that. That was something I had to tell them or teach them. It was pretty easy to get that lesson. And then there's sometimes, you know, we could see where family members, or you hear about situations where women who have, they're stuck. They don't have any means of supporting themselves. They don't have any skills or profession or a business. And they see how sometimes these women don't have options. They don't have choices. And I would tell them, I never want this to happen to you. I always want you to be able to, you know, have that, I guess, self-determination. And there's certain things that give that. One is having that, you know, the courage to make up your mind to do things. And the other thing is to be able to, back that up financially if you need to, you know, so.
So listen to what you're saying, though. What lessons about money besides that What lessons about money did you learn when you were growing up? What did your mother and father teach you?
They never said very much.
Mostly by example?
Yeah, mostly by example. They never said very much. My father really, some of the values that I know I got from him, because he did tell me these same things. He said, you know, you should be able to have your own money and not have to depend on a man or a husband. I'm thinking, well, God, he's telling me that. I think now I said, he's telling this to me 50 years ago. I mean, he was like a feminist. Why, you know, I mean, I think, God, he was telling me things back then. Like, you know, like whatever you do in life. And there's two things he told me. So whatever you do in life, have your own business. Hmm. And of course I never forgot that.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I might have been 9 years old and I just like, okay. He says, if you're a hairdresser or whatever you do, have your own business. Okay. So he
wow.
was, so I he only said it one time and I just took it in. And, but he also said to me, he says, you know, I see, you know, sometimes these young girls come in and they, you know, they get married and marriage doesn't work out. And now they're struggling. And he says, I never want to see this happen to you. You have your own money or whatever, your career or whatever. You have your own money so you can always be able to take care of yourself. And I think he only said that once, and I completely took that in. And I believe I imparted that to my daughter. You have options. So those were some principles, but also, one thing about money that I will say that my father was not very materialistic, and I think that he was. So they were not caught up in a lot of status symbols, and they were very down to earth. Yeah, my father was not materialistic at all. So he never got caught up in feeling like, oh, you have to have, you know, I don't know, $3,000 pocketbook or certain things like that, or just getting caught up in feeling like having a lot of status things.
Yeah. Usual trappings.
Yeah. I feel like I escaped that. And, my mother was not, well, she was more like, always get good qualities. Don't get just caught up in, you know, just, you know, getting things for the sake of things. So I think that also, it was part of my, value system about money. Like, it's not, let your money work for you. Don't just get all caught up in, like you said, a lot of the trapping.
Yeah. Well, what do you think has been the most threatening to your financial security?
Well, I saw that question, and actually, I didn't have much to say about, which I guess is good. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, what one thing that is, you know, I started investing when I was maybe my late 30s, early 40s, it's still something that is a big part of what I do. And I'm just so fascinated with Wall Street and things like that, because back then I didn't know any women who were doing anything related to finance or anything like that. But I really found myself. I was always reading as much as I could, and I was buying stocks and just so, you know, like, wow, this is amazing. And I mean, over time, of course, I have, you know, I've continued to do that. I guess if there was a threat is that I'm not invested properly, that I'm not diversified enough. I'm getting bad financial advice. But so far, I'm doing all right. I really I really could not come up with a good answer for that question because nothing came to mind as to what is the biggest financial threat to me at this point.
Well, fortunately, I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. Usually there are people that can, you know, go on and on about, well, I did this and I did that. And they're all valuable life lessons that were learned from these experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that in the absence of them, you haven't lived your life, because you certainly have. You just mentioned before that you had 4 offices and you brought them down to 2. Mm-hmm. So there was some, I'm not saying it was a threatening thing, but at least it was you taking a look at things and saying that there might be a better way for me to do this.
That's it.
And
that's it.
And I think that's the way that people learn something about all the money and finances. Let me ask you another question. What would you say are the events that have happened in your life that you would describe as defining moments?
Well, I mean, professionally, it would definitely be that decision to go into practice, go into business. It came out as an opportunity where a health facility wanted to privatize their dental division, and I didn't know what that meant, but anyway,
now I know.
But I had to submit a proposal, and I just gave the information to someone who wrote up a proposal, submitted, and they selected it, and that helped get me started. So that was, I guess, that kind of like, oh yeah, why not? You know, let's do that. And at first I was going to do that with a potential partner, and then the partner pulled out, and then I thought, oh wow, now I'm going to do this by myself. I was relying on that person to know all the answers, and so that meant like, okay, well, you know, this ball started to roll, and you know, I'm just gonna go with it. So I'd say that was my, professionally, that was a defining moment. There were, I guess, in the times of opening up some of the other offices, there were some defining moments there. But also, like you said, sometimes closing them is a defining moment too. When you say, you know what, there's a lot of running around in keeping, you know, this particular office, and let me really look at, and this is good business thing, is when you say, let me look at the real potential here. Let me look at the amount of energy that's put out. And does this really make sense? Does this really make sense? And so there were some defining moments there too, but I think it was the initial yes that was, I guess, the most defining moment.
Let me ask you about that in regards to your personal life. And the reason I'm asking the question is not just to pry, but to see there were defining moments that most people would throw out, be things like getting married, mm-hmm. having children, being a grandparent, whatever those were. But then there was a financial effect of each of those things when they became defining moments. Was there anything like that in your personal life that made you consider or reconsider your personal finances around that?
Well, not so much. And I now that I, you know, think about that, my husband died about 20 years ago, and he died very suddenly. And although, well, you know, I tell you, when, even though I was pretty savvy about, you know, I guess handling money, and we did keep our finances somewhat separately, you know, because we just did, and filed our taxes separately, and we just found that it worked out better for us. But I cannot imagine when I hear about women who have no idea of what goes on financially, and their husband dies suddenly. I just thought to myself, it is it is enough to deal with the trauma of sudden death. That's traumatic enough. But then to have to go and unravel all these things that you have no idea of what was going on, how all these financial decisions, even though I still had things that I had to work through and get a handle on, I felt like I was in better, I felt like I was in better shape as compared to some other women. I think, wow, imagine women who were housewives and they have no idea. They never handled anything. They never handled the money at all. And, okay. And I thought to myself, this is traumatic enough. I can't even imagine how a woman in that situation. So I will say that was perhaps, an advantage I had.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
definitely.
And also it made me appreciate, saying I did not want, I really was committed to maintaining as much stability as I could. So, you know, financially, I knew that, you know, I was going to be able to, you know, everything could be the same. Everything. I mean, that still doesn't take the, I guess, the edge out of that pain, but at least it wasn't a sense of where, and sometimes when there's a death where, you know, okay, now we have to move or decisions that make it very, you know, add to the trauma and instability to kids. So I was grateful that I could maintain things.
You certainly did. That is, you are the exception to the rule. You know that.
I am, you know, by the grace of God, really.
Yes.
But I, you know, cause I could see how that could be so much more traumatic to, you know, like, okay, now we have to move. Now we have to do this. And how unsettling that must be to kids. Mm-hmm. So, I was grateful for, I guess that was in terms of a defining moment. I think that just made me feel more determined that it's somewhat fed back to what my father had said about, you know, you have to make sure you can maintain yourself and take care of yourself because life is very unpredictable. And I don't know if that was a prophecy or what. But
I don't know, but I was just going to say the same thing.
Yeah, like,
he certainly had you going in the right direction.
Yeah, life is very unpredictable, and you just have to have, you just want to make sure that you can take care of yourself or take care of your children and things like that, because it is unpredictable, and I think that maybe that is a defining moment, made me feel that I really want to be sure that I'm as stable financially as possible and continue to be.
Well, let's take a look now at the future and say, does Dr. Collier ever see herself retiring?
Oh, I do. I do.
Do you really?
Yeah. I may do it by weaning myself as opposed to, I mean, I know people, you know, friends of mine who retired, who, you know, they put in their papers to human resource and whatever, and one day, then, you know, 3 months later, they walk out with their stuff. I said, well, with me, it'll probably be a little more stepping down. Mm-hmm. But I have, many things that I enjoy doing. I would, and I feel like I would like to, why I still have the energy and the, you know, I can, fall back on some of the experience I've had that I said, I'd like to do more in terms of community service. That's always been very important to me. And I always have done something. But I feel like I could do more.
Still bad in you.
That was my mother.
The need of your mother?
Yeah. That was my mother. And always doing volunteer work, always helping people, and just volunteer work, you know, know, heels on wheels, and it just, she was always doing something. You know, that this was just part of who she was. And, so that I definitely got that from her, saying that, you know, was, well, we have an obligation. And I don't mean obligation like a good obligation, and so my desire is that, and I'm not exactly sure what it will be that I'll do, but I feel like I want to do something where I can really point to it and say, I made a difference in this world. Something that I, you know, still churning it in my head, but something that I'll do, that I will do, that will say, okay, this made a difference.
Tell me about the scholarships you set up with two colleges.
Scholarships are, it feels very good. And it's so easy to do. I mean, it's so easy to do to create a scholarship. First of all, I wanted to honor my father. I wanted to honor my mother. And, actually I had another one for my brother. I wanted to do something with their name on it. And I'm just trying to imagine how they would feel, or kind of feel like, yeah, they would like this. They would like this. Helping a student, and kind of thinking of them in terms of, well, this would be a student, you know, my mother used to love to read. And I said, I want to have the scholarship for an English major. You know, I wanted to have a scholarship for my father, who was, oh my God, my father was, he was, talk about determination. He was graduated.
Okay, so now I know it's genetic.
Yeah, that is genetic. He was kind of like, what is the movie that Will Smith was in, where he was a homeless guy going
Happiness.
Yes.
The Pursuit of Happiness.
Yes. Yeah. That was my dad. He was like that. And he defied so many odds to get his education. So I wanted to have a scholarship named after him, which I do have it at actually Temple Dental School.
All right.
Yeah, Temple Dental School. So, yeah. I mean, it's an easy way to honor loved ones, but also to help. To help. And I always like to say, you know, whenever I, you know, whatever contact I have a recipient, I always say, someday when you get a chance, I hope you will also have a scholarship for some, I mean, it's that, what do you call it, play it forward type of thing. Someday when you can, later on, you know, consider having a scholarship to help. If this felt very good to you, imagine you can do this for someone else. It's, you know, somewhere along the line, you can do this. And, so that's something is, it feels good. It feels good. Yeah.
Okay. That sounds really great. So at this point, I have to say thank you, Dr. Catherine Collier, for being my guest today on Power of the Purse podcast. So if someone would like to get in touch with you, Dr. Collier, how would they do that?
Well, best way, I guess, is to the office in here in Baltimore, Maryland, is 410-235-0062. Also, the website is specdental.com. So between the two of them, that would be lovely if anybody wants to get in contact with me. And
okay, that sounds good. And if you'd like to share your thoughts with me on your money experiences, contact me at Lynn, LYNN, at powerofthepurse.com. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
We hope you've enjoyed your time with us on this episode of the Power of the Purse podcast. If you're ready to take action, go to womenofsubstancellc.com/call and sign up for an exclusive 15-minute one-on-one call with your host, Lynn Evans. Thanks again, and join us next time to explore more ways you can take control of your finances and your life.